On today's show, Penhill Council rezones part of Oxford Landing. The Canadian flag over Parliament has hung at half-mast for over 5 months, and isolation mandates continue around the world. And what do these things have in common? In a word, culture. This is Penhill Talk Radio. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. My name is Brian Constein. I am joined, as always, with my co-host, Michael Rowland.
Hello, hello.
So, in town council's last meeting before the recent election, they decided to rezone the southeast corner of Oxford Landing. And now wait, before you turn off the episode, it will get more exciting. I want you to consider this. This process of land rezoning is actually a fairly common procedure for council to do, and I want you to consider the significance, though, of what is usually probably considered a fairly boring topic. Consider that when land is rezoned, that it's going to change what will be built there. So what you drive by every day will change depending on what council decides to do with that land, or at least how they decide to zone it. Consider that when land is rezoned, it will change how you interact and what you will do on that land. So you do different things on residential land than you do on commercial land.
Yeah.
And consider also that when land is rezoned, it changes what will become normal in a community. So that business you drive by, that school perhaps you visit every day, it becomes normal. It becomes part of what you expect a community to have. It affects the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's basically what we want to talk about on this podcast, is the culture of Penhold. And it's the idea of culture is kind of a tricky one. It's something that we all are kind of familiar with, but it's hard to kind of pin down.
Yeah. Yeah. We all recognize culture. We all talk about culture, but we don't have an easy time defining what culture is.
Yeah. I think we can all point to, different culture wars, quote unquote, points of contention usually is what we think of. I think when we think of culture,
yeah.
But I want to look at it on kind of a broader scale and perhaps put a little bit of framework around an idea that's really often hard to define. So I guess for this podcast, we'll be working with kind of this definition of culture. It'll simply be the way of life for a group of people. It is the choices, the behaviors, the actions, the environment by which a group of people interact and live and do life together. And I think it's worth pointing out that there isn't simply one culture. I think this is obvious.
Yeah.
But I think I think we have to be aware that there's different cultures. You can look at, Asian culture or European culture, or Canadian culture. But I think even if you look at your own life, you recognize that you are part of different cultures yourself.
Yeah, and they'll overlap a little bit, but you're going to have culture of within your own family. You're going to have culture within your community groups. You're going to have culture within your town and growing from there. And it's obviously going to overlap, but there is a distinction, separate things about each of those cultures.
Yeah, and I think we all recognize that how you behave around your parents versus your in-laws, for example.
Yeah.
Those are different cultures.
Yeah, dramatically different.
There's different practices, different ways of acting, different environments in which you're. So I think we're all familiar with kind of this the different ways we act in different settings, and that kind of is reflected of these different cultures, this different ways of life that we find ourselves in, depending on what kind of group of people we're part of.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, it can be a little bit tough to kind of define but also to what kind of elements impact culture. If I wanted to change it, or if I just want to be more observant of what kind of culture I'm part of, especially if part of a culture is not perhaps healthy, or you disagree with a culture, like what do I have to do to perhaps affect it or change it in some way? So it helps know what kind of goes into a culture. And so in this episode, we'll go through six different elements that kind of affect culture. And these come from much more learned people than I on this topic. I'll leave the sources on our website. You can go to it at penholdtalkradio.ca and just go to the episode tab, and I'll have all the resources there that you can check out. But yeah, we will kind of walk through six different facets or aspects of culture that hopefully will help us gain a more of a grasp on what this thing is that we do together, this life that we've created here in Penhold, and perhaps more broadly in our nation, perhaps even in your own home and family. Mm-hmm. So the first aspect of culture is known as artifacts. And really, this is defined as any man-made creations. And so this could be anything from cars to iPhones. This could be anything, or this could include social media, different scientific theories. So it doesn't have to necessarily be a physical element, though. Right. that's a really big part of this. But it could just be a new idea that's been brought into a group.
Right.
And I'm sure we can kind of imagine different moments, epiphanies that we might have that have perhaps changed our own life.
Yeah.
And so it's not simply physical, tangible artifacts, but it can be kind of artifacts in the sense of a new idea being brought into a community.
Yeah, very much the things that affect us, and some of those things bigger than others, but everything in our life has some impact on the way we live and the way we react and the mm-hmm. way we treat each other and so on.
Yeah. So when we look at Penhold, you know, we might notice artifacts like the multiplex. It's a notable building in our community, and it dramatically changed how the way of life in Penhold is done. Before, kind of the community center, the main one, was the Memorial Hall. That was where everything congregated around. But now the multiplex has become kind of a landmark here. Memorial Hall is still something that is kind of honored. It's still a building of recognition. The fire department, library, the penholder. These are all physical things. The trains that come through, that's led a lot into the history of Penhold. Mm-hmm. Tim Hortons, Canadian institution, or Canadian artifact, but we'll get into the next one about institutions in a second. But how about other things like the playgrounds, ice rinks, new artifacts in culture, masks, vaccine passports?
Yeah.
These are new artifacts in our culture.
Yeah, that very much define the way we live life around each other. These new things, like let's look at these ones with the COVID stuff, with the masks and vaccine passports, that affects the way we interact with each other, the way we interact with businesses, the way we interact with everything around us. Mm-hmm. So it's very much an impact on culture.
Yeah, it can't be denied that it's affected the way we do life together. Social media, I don't think I have to explain how much that's affected it, but kind of connected to that is, you know, just imagine how much your life has changed through the introduction of the smartphone.
Yeah.
How you converse with people, how you, I remember, and if I thought hard enough, I could probably still recall some phone numbers of friends.
Yeah.
Back from the day.
So many people now have no idea about phone numbers. You program it into your phone and you never look at it again. And so smartphones have changed something as simple as that.
Yeah. You know, I could tell you my wife's number, and I'm trying to think if I could on the spot, what phone number I would recall, but nothing. It's not like anything pops into mind.
Not many. Like, no,
I want to call this person, so I look up their name.
Yeah.
So just that simple thing, has dramatically changed how my childhood culture, as it were,
yeah.
Is different. Yeah. I can remember all my friends' phone number. I had to, if I wanted to call.
Well, in the way we access information, it's when holding a conversation with someone, if somebody brings up a question about anything. Who was that guy in that movie? You don't spend time wondering anymore. We've changed the way we behave. The instant response is to pick up your phone and start looking it up.
Yeah.
Just that has become a part of our culture.
Yeah. We don't have to put up with that. Who is that? Who's that face question with anymore? Yeah. Yeah. We've done away with that kind of existential struggle, at least in that aspect of it. So those are artifacts, that have impacted how we do life. So that's artifacts. The second one is institutions. And again, I think this is fairly straightforward. This is any group or organization that contributes to kind of the culture or the way of life, at large. So schools are an obvious one, churches, sports clubs, newspapers, perhaps in Pendleton here, you know, the reporter,
right? Yep.
Where do you go for your news? Reporter is a good one. Here's an interesting kind of example of how that institution has changed. And it kind of relates back to the artifacts. I don't look at the reporter as much as I did when it was a paper form.
Yeah. It's become a lot less read for a lot of people. There's some dedicated readers out there, but there are many of us who don't really browse it as much now that it's digital.
Yeah. And so, just think about how that affects our awareness of what's going on in town. So I don't know if you're like me, the switch from kind of, if you will, the paper artifact of the Penhold Reporter to a digital form changed the kind of the culture for me. And in some way it affected how I interacted with Penhold at large.
Yeah.
So Penhold institutions, you know, the Optimists, I gotta give them their shout out.
Yeah.
They're always front and center, especially at large, at community events.
The fire department.
Oh yeah.
The huge way they are involved in the community affects the culture of the community.
Yep.
And you see them everywhere. So that is a very big thing in our community.
Yep. They are certainly an institution in that way.
Yeah.
We have tons of different community groups of larger and smaller impacts, but nonetheless, those all feed into the culture of Penhold.
Yeah.
The third one are the different practices of a culture. And so this relates to kind of any common or traditional action or activity. Easy examples are weddings, graduations, elections, just like we had. Award shows for some. For me, the World Series in baseball just ended. So that was a practice most nights for me. But sports, tailgate parties, I'm sure many people are familiar with those. Those are all kind of these practices, these things, these behaviors that we do together. Coming up, we have Remembrance Day. Again, we have certain practices that we go through to remember and honor those who have sacrificed on our behalf. Christmas lights will be coming up. These are all practices that, if they weren't there, would mean we have a different culture.
Yeah,
there's some cultures that Christmas lights are just not a thing. Other common practices that the town is involved in would be like the fall festival. Like this has become kind of a, you know, people who live in Penhold, this is a very common tradition now that you go to the fall festival, or you come out on Saturday night to watch the fireworks. These are all practices that the culture does together.
And that we place significance in. Like, I look at something like the fall festival. With COVID, we were limited this year on what we could do, but it was important for the culture of this community to ensure that it went forward in some way. Mm-hmm. So we place a lot of significance in the practices of our culture.
Yeah.
It's very important to us.
Yeah. I think it was the previous year where it was dramatically different.
Yeah.
I think I was out of town for that one, maybe, but it was certainly far more scaled back if anything happened, like I can't recall, but I know it was dramatically different. Community Christmas was certainly different.
Yes. And people react to that because the practice of their culture has changed. Mm-hmm. Things aren't the way they are used to them being. And that's a big impact on them.
Yep. Now, these practices often reflect kind of the fourth element, and these are beliefs. So these are ideas that are held in common among a group. And so here, I think you can imagine how your own different culture groups are easily distinguished in this manner.
Yeah.
You know, so if you attend church, that's going to have its own kind of belief set there. Whereas versus Penhold versus Canada, each of these cultures has a different set of ideas that they hold to, different beliefs that they value. So, you know, examples like the value of life. We believe that life has value. We'll get to another element of, you know, why do we believe that? That's another element of culture, but that's kind of a peek behind the screen. What makes us male or female? That's a huge conversation nowadays. Dramatic changes in culture, especially on the national scale.
Yeah.
But even like that kind of conversation started up again started up here a little bit at the candidate forum.
Yes.
That those ideas are working their way through the society, through culture. How we behave at work, how we behave at the in-laws.
Yeah.
These are all beliefs that we have. How you have a certain belief about how your kids should react in public.
Yes.
We all and a culture has a certain expectation. They hold a common belief about how kids should behave in certain times. Just like culture has I think we all feel that.
Yeah.
A part of it. And part of perhaps, and this is kind of interesting little side, censorship is kind of is a part of culture, but it's almost like it becomes almost an overbearing belief on
right.
someone. So when you feel that you need to be censored, you are feeling a belief of a community that says that we believe that this word or this topic is off limits.
Right.
And so we feel the weight of that belief and we just call it censorship.
Yeah.
Or if you're on the other flip side of it, you might just call it good decorum or good,
yeah.
proper, healthy discussion limits. That those are just kind of flip sides of viewing of the same belief.
Yeah.
And so we're seeing that all over the place. And it's not limited to, you know, one moment in time, this idea. This is what makes culture a culture, is a set of common beliefs. So in Penhold, if you look, especially, this is harder when you're talking about kind of these beliefs of a group.
It's easier,
you know, you can ask a person what they believe. With larger groups, you have to go by their actions, kind of the group actions. And so, you know, when I see events like Fall Festival or Community Christmases, I see a town whose culture values the importance of community.
Yeah.
When you look at the events that the library puts on, community is front and center.
Yeah, a belief that this is a place that you want to be a part of with your family, you want to be involved in. It's a place where you want to be connected. It's mm-hmm. a pretty common belief to this community that may not be the same as another.
Yeah, I agree. When you look at some of the, especially with Remembrance Day coming up, I think Penhold's done a pretty good job of kind of esteeming, having a high value placed on their history.
Right.
Like Memorial Hall is still here. when it comes with the, a few years ago, we had the Memorial Hall curtain on display.
Right.
Again, yep. Reflecting Penhold's history. So I think, and even the motto for the town, honoring the past, challenging the future, again, reflects the belief of the town, or at least kind of the belief that is trying to be infused into the culture in the very least.
Right. Yeah.
The motto or the slogan that the town is putting out kind of as an advertisement is a great place to call home. there it's reflecting a certain set of beliefs that this is a town of community. This is a town that is good for families, good for kids. We just got the high school in. That was all driven by the fact that we believe it's important for kids to be able to grow up all right here in town.
Yeah.
So all these things are reflecting a belief, and so when and ideas that they're kind of held in common by community, and so when we're looking at different cultures, it's important to identify these different connecting ideas, and when you're evaluating the strength of a culture or even the strength of a country, the fewer common beliefs or beliefs that are held in common should be a warning sign. I think part, and not to get too far off on the side, but I think it's becoming harder and harder to identify
right
these kind of common beliefs, common values,
yeah,
held across a wide stretch of land or a wide stretch of people.
Yeah, if you can't find common ground, at least some overlapping common beliefs, what's going to hold you together?
Yes.
There's no reason to be a joint community if you can't share anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so it's a tough one to perhaps identify all the common beliefs, but they have to be there, whether they are stated or whether they're just simply assumed or put out front as a town motto is.
Yeah.
There has to be some sort of common beliefs that hold a culture and a people together in order for them to form culture. So we've gone through artifacts, institutions, practices, beliefs, and now the fifth one is mood or the ethos. And this is kind of the general character or environment of a group. And here you can kind of think of it by contrasting environments such as rural versus urban, country versus city, conservative versus liberal, maybe a more collective view versus a more individualistic perspective. And so this is kind of the, like I said, just kind of the atmosphere that kind of envelops or is part of a culture. So I think the easiest example is urban versus rural. And for clarity's sake, I'll go with city versus country. That whole rural word, it just does not sound well coming out of me. It sounds like I'm growling or something. So country versus city. So when you look at city and especially, and this becomes most evident, I think, when you look at how cities and urban areas tend to vote, they tend to be on the more liberal side of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Which tends to be in line with more, with larger government, to be kind, it's more government involvement,
right,
with their lives. Then they're comfortable with that. And part of that comes from the environment in which they're living. They are living in very tight quarters, living close together, busy lives, and with more people interacting together, it means your actions are going to affect a lot more people.
Right.
And so what needs to happen is you need rules, you need boundaries. You might need more, you need guidelines for how we are going to get along with one another.
Yeah.
And so when you're in the city, you know, how loud I turn my stereo up might actually be something that needs to be regulated.
Yeah, you've got a lot of neighbors that are going to be impacted by that. Out in the country, one person says, "Hey, buddy, your radio's too loud. Turn that down." It's a little more difficult in the city. You're all crammed into one tight area that it takes some regulation, some control for people to not kill each other.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's why you have sound bylaws. There's bylaws regarding, we talked about it last week, I think, about how tall your grass can grow, how large your backyard fires can be, or when you can have backyard fires.
Or if you can have backyard fires.
Exactly. And so, you know, why? Well, because if things get out of hand, especially the fires, there can be a lot more people impacted. And so it's not surprising that we see urban city dwellers more comfortable with government involvement, because that's how it is.
Yeah.
They require it, especially on the municipal level, but that thinking just broadens out as well.
Yeah.
to larger, that's at least one element of why you might see urban centers vote more liberal than you do in the country, where you tend to see in wide open spaces less concern, or I should put it this way, where your actions are less directly impacting others.
Yeah.
And so it tends to breed a more kind of individualistic mindset. You're not seeing 100 people every day.
Yeah.
You're out in the country on your acreage. You might pass your farmer friend down the road, but overall you have this kind of fend for yourself kind of mentality, and you don't need a lot of municipal involvement in how you're going to go about your day to day.
Yeah. You can live your life. You don't need anybody else involved in it. You just go do your day to day and interact with those neighbors you choose to interact with.
Yeah. And so when it comes to voting, if you are already a person who doesn't have a lot to do with government, you're probably not going to vote for more government.
Yeah.
So this is what I mean. So this is kind of the mood that we're talking about, the general environment of a culture. And so when we look at Penhold, I tend to see it more in the country perspective, at least as far as attitude goes.
Yeah, it's kind of on the edge.
Yeah,
almost a suburb of Red Deer. We're kind of on that edge, but still leaning a little more, at least I see it as leaning a little more towards the country life, that type of approach.
Yeah, everything's a little slower. We vote more in line with kind of the county.
Yeah.
Versus say Red Deer or more liberal, even like Calgary or Edmonton. So if you're just looking at voting, it kind of reveals kind of the culture, the mood of a culture, at least.
Yeah.
I see more reliance upon one another as opposed to government. So especially when it comes to crime, people are looking out for one another, posting on Facebook, about what might have happened to them.
Yeah.
Though at the same time, we have bylaws that reflect more of the requirements of that come with urban living. And even when it comes to crime, we see government involvement, which I'm not saying one way is better than the other, but just what is the general mood of environment, character of the culture of Penhold. I think it's a slower, more country style, conservative style, still value our kind of independence, and yet our town, if you will, the fact that we live in proximity to one another means that we're going to have some influences, more some drift towards kind of the city style. Yeah. Of living.
Yeah.
So the mood or kind of the character of a culture is number five. And the last one is meta beliefs. And now don't think that's a big term, or get scared away by it. All it is you can think of it as kind of the foundational beliefs. And so we looked already at one aspect of culture being beliefs. What are kind of common traditions, common values, common ideas that a culture has. And so, we look at an action and say, just as an example, that action is wrong, that action is right. We prefer when people act in this way versus this way. When we're looking at meta beliefs, I think the term foundational beliefs is going to be a better term in the end, is that it answers the question of, well, why do we think that action is right? We may say that, you shouldn't spray paint your neighbor's garage door. But why do we think that's wrong? What standard is underlying that decision making? And so when we ask questions about, you know, what we believe about male or female, underlying that is asking questions about, you know, what is it that makes us human? So these meta beliefs really focus on kind of these foundational beliefs, these things that kind of undergird everything else. Perhaps a better analogy would be that these are the glasses that we view everything else in. So we look through these glasses and we see an action, we define it as right or wrong. Well, part of the reason why we might think of those things as right or wrong is because of the lenses that we are looking through. And the tricky thing about this category is that a lot of these things go unconsidered. They are simply assumed, even more than what is held in common. These are bedrock kind of things that are often overlooked if considered at all. We kind of look at the surface of things, but these are undergirding things.
Yeah, and we may share some common beliefs and not realize that we're coming from a very different foundation or a very different reason for holding those beliefs. Mm-hmm. It's like you say, a lot of it is unconsidered. We don't really think about why, or if we do, we think that everybody has the same why.
I think a really interesting example that's kind of come up now is related to people who are opposed to taking vaccines and those who are advocating for it. And there's a kind of interesting dynamic that goes on where a lot of people there's many people who don't take the vaccines for personal freedom reasons. And in many cases, they've argued that they've tried to make the comparison that these mandatory vaccines are akin to say Nazi health Nazi medical experiments on the Jews. And it's so ludicrous. I think that's right. And so people automatically push back at the ridiculousness of that. What I think though is what's going on is that the people who are kind of making that comparison between vaccination mandates and Nazi medical experiments, they might be touching more on where they see a shift in foundation. So they're looking at where some people are maybe just looking at the beliefs that I believe it's good that people should be mandatorily vaccinated for the health of health of society and the individual. What people who are arguing, bringing up kind of the Nazi comparison are, I think they're touching on the foundational issue is, well, what happens when a government is allowed to have this much power?
Right.
It seems to be more of a foundational issue. And they're just looking down that foundational pathway and seeing, well, we're here and we are moving in that direction.
Yeah.
And I think they're just jumping way far ahead, but I don't think they are necessarily pointing in a wrong direction, or at least they're pointing out something that we should at least be conscious of. Like I said, foundational issues are easy to slide by.
Yeah.
And we find ourselves surprised perhaps where we end up. And so, yeah, I don't think mandatory vaccines and Nazi medical treatment is the same. But it does kind of highlight foundational issues of government power and control.
Yeah.
And what are those limits? That is a worthy conversation that should be had and brought to the surface and not simply let drift. So there's one thing in being to say yes, vaccinations might be mandated at this time, versus it is a good thing that the government has all this power to impose mandates.
Yeah,
those are two different conversations. I think that's perhaps where a disconnect is going on with that group, and I think it helps illustrate a little bit of the difference between beliefs, kind of these surface level, versus more of these foundational issues.
Right. Yeah, the potential for where that foundation will lead to, like you say, you don't know where you're going to, or well, not that you don't know where you're going to end up, but you may be surprised where you're going to end up if you don't pay attention to those foundational beliefs.
Yeah. So those are six elements. Hopefully this gives you a little bit of a framework and hasn't bored you. I think if you go out and just walk around Penhold next time you do, and just kind of note the different artifacts out there. What are these things that are kind of physically out there that are impacting your life here in Penhold, and the culture that we have. So we have artifacts. These are the man-made creations, and these are both physical things and ideas. We have institutions. These are the groups that kind of contribute to the culture at large. We have practices. These are kind of the common traditional activities. We have beliefs, common values, common ideas by a group. We have kind of the mood, the general characteristic or atmosphere of a culture. And then finally, we got the meta beliefs, these kind of foundational values, foundational beliefs that kind of drive or cause that kind of drive the direction or the general direction of a culture.
And it's interesting to think about these things and how different the town would be without them or with something different. You think about artifacts and how different Penhold would be if we had a casino on the way into town, or if we didn't have the multiplex, how mm-hmm. dramatically different this town would be, as well as institutions. It'd be a totally different town if we didn't have the charitable groups and the school PAC organizations and all the different groups in this town that do events and that run the various community events and organizations, and it just would be a completely different town. Mm-hmm. When you walk around and look at all the things that are here, think how would you want to live here if we didn't have what we have, or if we changed what this town was.
Yeah.
It changes the culture and it changes what it's like to live in Penhold.
Yeah. And so many of those things just taken for granted or just assumed or considered as a nice to have. But I think we need to look at some of these things in kind of the larger context. Yeah. What does that take out from the culture? You know, if I leave out the salt from my supper meal, it affects it.
Yeah.
And it seems like a small little thing on the side, but all those seasonings go into making up the whole thing. And while you might not recognize their presence all the time, it's often their absence that kind of highlights what they were doing there. And yeah, I think that's something that we need to keep in mind. And so with those six elements in mind, we're going to go back to kind of apply these to rethinking about these rezoning, these boring rezoning procedures that council often goes through. And so, as I started off with, rezoning changes what's built on that land. So that's the artifacts. This is the kind of the structure, the physical things of a land that are impacted by what council decides is going to be built there.
Yep.
So it affects the artifacts of the Penhold culture. It changes what we do on those places. So practices. And this is where, again, last episode, we talked about how the town council rezoned some town land to allow for the building of Critter Corner Playground. That changed the practices of a lot of people.
Yep. Suddenly there's a new park to go visit. There's people that choose to live in that part of town because there's a park conveniently located for their kids. It changes dramatically.
Yeah, it's another place where we're community or we're people meet, different practices. You now go to that chunk of land because that playground is there.
Yeah.
That's not a behavior, not a practice that you would have otherwise. It was just empty land. It changes what becomes normal in those places. Again, it was an empty land, so you wouldn't expect much now, but it now becomes normal to see kids out on the south side of Penhold playing around at the playground. So it changes what we believe should be happening outside there. So now when you hear screaming and yelling, if you live around that area,
it's a different experience.
Believe, yeah, exactly. It might trigger a different belief than if that playground wasn't there. Yeah. So that rezoning changed how people interact with that land and kind of the culture that is brought into Penhold. Slightly different, but I think it's connected. this past town council allowed for the structured commercial zoning in a way that would allow for a recreational drugstore to be opened in town, and it's placed in a quite prominent location. And I know everyone in Penhold knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it's placed right by the grocery store, right beside the post office, right beside the new DQ.
The same place we all go for our regular amenities.
Yep. And so, like I said, that business there affects the culture in a way that would be different if it weren't there. Now, again, I'm not here, at least not on this episode. We'll probably tackle it some other episode. Not here to discuss the pros and cons of having a marijuana shop in town. But regardless of your view on it, you have to say that it affects culture. It affects how we interact or how we do life, especially in that area, but in general as well.
Yeah, there's no denying that it has an impact. It's something that it's always there. It's always visible, and kids ask about what that store is. Mm-hmm. And it changes the way we live in Penhold.
Yeah, and so now, you know, the fact that we see a grocery store is normal. You know, we expect to see a grocery store.
Yeah.
We expect to see restaurants. There's at least two spas or salons down there. You know, these are things that we expect to see. And now, because it's been allowed to be put there, we can expect to see, it's become normalized that you can buy recreational drugs in that same space. It all becomes kind of placed on equal settings and equal value. And it no doubt affects the beliefs of a culture.
Yeah.
All right, so let's. Which one should we close on? The story on national flags, or we got COVID restrictions before our episode gets too long?
Let's do the COVID restrictions.
COVID restrictions. All right. This one I think is a good illustration for highlighting the importance or kind of the significance of these foundational beliefs we have, the six element, these meta beliefs, and. So, you know, we are all familiar now for at least the last 18 months or more, that in some form or fashion, there has been some sort of isolation or quarantine, social/physical distancing mandates or requirements as part of society. Again, just to highlight the practice component, this has changed, you know, how we stand in line at a shopping mall or a grocery store, for crying out loud.
Oh yeah.
So these like, that's just a simple example, but it's interesting. Yeah, that again affects the culture.
It affects the way you think about everything. I can't even watch a TV show or a movie without seeing something on screen, thinking, "Wow, that they're too close," or "You're not supposed to do that." you get so ingrained with these ideas, and that is culture. That's the culture of these restrictions has changed the way we think about things.
Yeah. People who probably would never worn a mask before, I know a lot, and I think I've seen studies that they like the mask. It gives them a sense of comfort, of kind of anonymity that they liked. It's changed how they want to go about their life. And so many people, I think you'll see this as an enduring symbol. I certainly get a wane.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to become kind of like what you might see in images of, say, Japan or China or something like that. But I don't think it's going to be as strange as it was 2 years ago to walk into the grocery store and see someone with a mask.
No, I think
in a couple of years,
we've got it into our culture enough now that we won't think of it as unusual. Mm-hmm. Whereas, 2 years ago, the thought of wearing a mask walking into a bank or wearing a mask walking into a gas station, you'd be seen as suspicious.
Yeah.
You couldn't do that. But now we've shifted. We've changed the way we think about it. So even if not everyone's doing it in a year or 2 years, it's still not going to be quite as foreign to us.
Yeah. That's, you will not, the police will not be called if you walk into a bank with a mask on now.
Yeah.
There's a practice change for you.
Yeah.
So that's again, example of how culture has changed during these times. But I think on a more foundational level, these restrictions have forced us to consider what it is to be human. And this becomes most evident when we look at these restrictions that require these quarantines, these isolations, physical distancing. The overwhelming goal of these government enforced mandates is to keep people alive. It is to kind of keep the death count down,
yeah,
as much as they can. And you know, I'm not here to say that's a bad thing.
yeah.
At the same time, it might be a bad thing to make that all of life. That I think is what ends up getting thrown out here. And so this is what I mean. So the belief that that you know, government should be there to protect us, or at least you know to restrain evil in some way, or I think they have a role in that. Yeah. The difficulty here though is that in doing so, government has a tendency to simplify what it is to be human. And their goal ends up being all about keeping humans alive, which is dramatically different than allowing humans to live.
Yeah, I know. I've seen a lot and heard a lot about seniors. That's a pretty common example here, is people who live in assisted living facilities where a lot of people have said that they would rather live their life and be with family for their last couple of years and die of COVID than to be left alone.
Yeah.
This loneliness, this isolation is difficult. And so they're not living, they're still alive.
And I came across a Canadian study, and this was done prior to COVID, that looked at the health effects of the elderly who were, and it did so on the basis of how much participation or how much sense of community belonging they had. And they found that particularly those that low participation, and what the study defined as low participation was whether or not you were engaged in a group of some sort, a group activity of some sort at least once a week. So if you weren't engaged at least once a week, you were considered low participation.
Right.
And here, just gonna, the study found, and this is a quote, low participation was significantly associated with death for men and women, even when the potential confounding effects of subjective isolation, that was kind of the sense of community belonging, socio-demographic characteristics, health status, and health behaviors were considered. So just the fact that people were alone, that they didn't engage with others, affected their ability to live. I think the article mentions that this was a study from, I think, 2007 to 2019, 2017, something like that, about 10 year window that they did this over. And I think it amounted to about an 8-month difference in lifespan over between when people died and not, based upon their participation rate.
So it's almost literally dying of loneliness.
Yeah. And that was already, I remember that conversation already popping up in media, even prior to COVID, before pandemics. And so these are, again, the point that we're trying to bring out is that there are these foundational issues that are at play that can't be ignored. They end up affecting culture, and they affect people in that culture in real, tangible ways,
yep,
in many life and death ways. That when we reduce man to simply a kind of a biological machine that we just gotta keep alive as long as possible, and that's what it means to be human, something is lost. Something in the culture is missing that is critical. We need to recognize that the foundational belief that humans are relational beings as well as biological or have biological elements, and if we don't, there are significant consequences to that. And so, you know, while yes, government has a role in protecting our lives, we need to be careful not to make that the point of being human.
Right.
And that's perhaps where a culture has to, if they go along with these kind of mandates, they do so reluctantly. I can understand people going along with the mandates. I completely get it. What I find harder to understand is them doing it with so much glee or so easily. Like there's just joy is too strong a word, but they do it even without hesitation. Things get lost though when you just move like that, when you just look at surface level beliefs and not consider more foundational and robust views of some of these issues.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And so we'll conclude there. So again, just to recap, artifacts, institutions, practices, beliefs, the mood or the ethos of a culture and its foundational beliefs. These are hopefully give you at least some kind of framework, some boundaries to help take or get a grasp on what culture is, perhaps see where you can affect it in different ways. And this podcast in part is an attempt to affect the culture of Penhold, or at least over time. We don't overestimate our significance right now on our fifth episode, but we are now here. We are now putting ourselves into the culture of Penhold. And so next time you're out for a walk, consider all the things that perhaps you just assume, but now think about, well, why do I do life this way?
Yeah.
And I think you'll be surprised at how many different aspects become apparent, especially when you think through these six frameworks, and perhaps how much clarity and perhaps even just, I was thinking about this in final thought. Just look around your house and think about how it's organized, how you have things laid out. And what does that say about you? I always find it interesting about you and your family. I find it interesting when I walk into someone's house, just kind of look around, you know, is the TV front and center? Do they have a TV? Does the kitchen look lived in? I'm not saying you have to go around a spotless house. In fact, that would say something different than a lived in house.
Yeah. No matter what your house looks like, it says something about you and the culture of your home.
Yeah. And so this isn't, so yeah, just to kind of make it a little more personal, you know, it's not just a culture is not just a big thing out there, but there's a culture, I think, in your own home too, that's worth taking a look at through these different lenses or through these different aspects of culture. And you know, if something feels off at home, hopefully this might give you at least a different angle to perhaps assess that. But like I said, hopefully this does spur some thoughts and ideas, and it hasn't bored you with talk of land rezoning, but again, hopefully highlighted how perhaps significant that is in affecting the culture. As always, leave a comment. We'd love to hear what you think about these elements or what you think about the culture of Penhold, why you perhaps live here. Was the culture one thing that kind of brought you in? Leave a comment on whatever platform you might be listening to us on. Thank you again for joining us. My name is Brian Constantine.
And I'm Michael Rowland.
And this has been Penhold Talk Radio.